First, I want to say what a pleasure it is to be here and be part of this panel with some friends and colleagues I haven't seen in a while and to meet some new ones. The problem about going last is, of course, there's so many things I want to say in response that I almost feel that I want to neglect my notes, but I will...
I will give you all time to respond to one another.
Like Saskia, I think it's always dangerous to talk about another city when you're there. I talk about Montreal all the time in Toronto. I have many, many severe opinions about Montreal in Toronto. But here, I think the only thing that I want to say in general about Toronto and its relation to other cities in this country, and this holds elsewhere too, is one of the blanket dangers of the kinds of talk that occurs about this city from elsewhere is it's implied in part by what Simon was saying, the danger of exoticism or orientalism, the romanticizing of the foreignness of the Montreal experience, so that cosmopolitan, European, you all know this all too well. And it seems to me one of the most interesting possibilities for a new discursive venture is to give us ways of talking that go beyond that. And not only go beyond it, but actually show why it is an absurd way to think about Montreal's relationship to the rest of Canada and the world. So that's the one thing I will say about Montreal specifically to start with. I realized when I was sketching my notes that there are 7 points I want to make, which is an appropriately biblical number. It also means that the notes I have form a kind of manifesto. It's not really a manifesto, but it reminded me of one of my favorite Evelyn Waugh characters in, I think it's... Decline and Fall, who says that all party invitations should be issued in the form of a manifesto. So next time you're having a party, make sure you craft a manifesto. So here's my manifesto of 7 points for the Institute. The first thing is there is very little actual interdisciplinarity in university culture, very little. Scarce to none in some universities. And I know this from my own painful experience. So there can be so-called interdisciplinary institutes or conversations or gatherings of scholars, but the amount of actual interdisciplinarity is vanishingly small, often. And I think the reason is that it's very hard to create the kind of discursive space in which people from different disciplines, we know this word well, can actually transcend their disciplinary training, the boundaries or the silos of their ways of thinking, and find new languages to go forward with. So that would be my first hope and wish for the Institute, is that it actually achieves interdisciplinarity. I can tell you just briefly part of the experience I allude to. I have dedicated at least the latter part of my career to writing what I think are interdisciplinary books, what I hope are, and have been pleased to find some traction with people in different disciplines. To my cost, however, in the home discipline of philosophy. So I only decided to do this when it was clear either that I didn't care anymore, but also luckily that I had enough of a toehold in an institutional wall to keep from falling to the rocks below. Because it's dangerous and it's costly. And so I think one of the most important missions of this institute will be to make it not costly in that way, but in fact so that it repays effort. So that's the first point. The second point is, and this just echoes what Simon said, he said outside, you have Florida and we have Bro. And I think you got the better of that division. But the second point is the creativity discourse, for the most part, is not creative. And I only happened to hear two talks today, but both of them had significant pushback on what I think of as the bankrupt creativity discourse. It's not creative. It's moribund. It's unhelpful. And it means that, therefore, actual creative discourse about cities has to transcend that, too. Third point, from my own perspective, and this adds to the substantive things that Saskia said about complexity and incompleteness, what Simone was saying about tension and rupture, which I think is great. My orientation to cities has been primarily phenomenological, by which I mean I'm very interested in the reflection on the lived experience of built environments. So I'm particularly interested in things like circulation and liminality, what it means to cross from private to public spaces and back again, what it means to enter into so-called transactional spaces, but also all the forms of circulation that make up the city, the circulation of bodies and technology, but also money, food, waste, information, sexual energy, cafexes, on and on and on. And it seems to me that that is a very rich way to think about cities from a variety of disciplinary perspectives. So I just add those things to what's already been said. Fourth point, about technology specifically, I feel that, you'll forgive me for the philosophical reference, but I feel that Heidegger's point in the question concerning technology is still insufficiently appreciated in the way we think about cities and about technology generally. And by that I mean this. Technology, as Heidegger reminds us, is not tools. It is a way of thinking about ourselves in the world. It is a world picture, in fact. It is a way of being in the world. It is a way of being in the world that he says is where everything is disposable. Not in the sense of being thrown away, necessarily, but being available for disposition, being available as standing reserve, to use his term, Gestell. And I don't think we're thinking about technology nearly critically enough. And partly this is because of novelty effects that was raised in the last session. Here's another social medium, and nobody wants to reflect on the conditions of its own use, how it might actually be changing our experience as people and as citizens because we're too busy, having fun with it. And the discourse gets stalled typically at the, well, you can use a tool for good or for bad impasse, which is absurd. There's no such thing as a neutral technology. I will rant more about that later, but everybody should read more Heidegger. I guess that's my fourth point. Fifth point is, again, to echo Simon, imagination. One of the things that I think is underappreciated in urban studies is the way that people's minds change. We often talk about the people in cities. Well, some architects never talk about people at all. They would rather the people weren't there to begin with. But we often talk about them as if they're exactly the same all the time, as if there's no temporality in human existence, that I might actually have shifting desires and conflicted desires, that I might come into contact with other people and change the way I am in the world. And only full attention to the human imagination gives us an appreciation of this fact about cities. Right, this maybe is one version of the incompleteness that Saskia talked about. It's not just material, right? It is psychological, phenomenological. We are always changing in this way. And that leads to the sixth point, which is the political dimension of this for me is about justice and the idea of the just city. I became interested in architecture and urban theory because I was a political theorist. And what I found was, most political theorists are not interested in material conditions at all. They work out theoretical objections to theoretical positions, but they don't really care about whether a park is any good for the people who might live in the residential block next to it. On the other hand, a lot of people who build and talk about architecture didn't seem to have a complete or comprehensive interest in the political dimensions of what was being built. And yet, at least as long ago as Aristotle, the wisdom is, first we build, and then the buildings build us. That this kind of dynamic relationship between ourselves and our built environments is constant, and it is suffused with political energy. So the very idea of the just city, I think, is something that's worth putting back into discursive play. It's a very old idea, very powerful idea. But I think a neglected idea. We've been thinking about far too many other things without being grounded in that quest for justice in the city. And then, so 7 points I said to be biblical. The seventh point is never forget about the weather. Thank you.
In Montreal, we rarely forget about the weather.